Chapter 11. Even Turquoise. Clang, clonk. Tiffany sat bolt upright, straw tumbling off her. But it was only the sound of a handle clanging on the side of a metal pail. Mrs. Umbridge was milking her cows. Pale daylight shone through the cracks in the walls. She looked up when she heard Tiffany.
"Ah, I thought one of my ladies must have arrived in the night," she said. "Want some breakfast, dear?" "Please."
Tiffany helped the old woman with her buckets, helped make some butter, patted her very old dog, had beans on toast, and then,
"I think I've got something here for you," said Mrs. Umbridge, heading for the little counter that was Two Shirts' entire post office. "Now, where did I?"
"Oh, yes." She handed Tiffany a small bundle of letters and a flat parcel, all held together by an elastic band and covered with dog hairs. She went on talking, but Tiffany barely noticed. There was something about how the carter had broken his leg, poor man, or maybe it was his horse that had broken a leg, poor creature, and one of the blizzards had brought down a lot of trees onto the track, and then the snow had set in so cruelly, dear, that not even a man on foot could get through, and so, what with one thing and another, the mail to and from the chalk had been delayed, and really there was hardly any of it anyway. All this was a kind of background buzzing to Tiffany, because the letters were all addressed to her, three from Roland and one from her mother, and so was the parcel. It had a businesslike air, and when open revealed a sleek black box, which itself opened to reveal. Tiffany had never seen a box of watercolour paints before. She hadn't known that so many colours existed in one place.
"Oh, a paint box," said Mrs. Umbridge, looking over her shoulder. "That's nice. I had one when I was a girl. And it's got turquoise in it. That's very expensive turquoise. That's from your young man, is it?" she added, because old women like to know everything, or a little bit more.
Tiffany cleared her throat. In her letters, she'd kept right off the whole painful subject of painting. He must have thought she'd like to try it. The colours in her hands gleamed like a trapped rainbow. "It's a lovely morning," she said, "and I think I'd better go home." On the Chilly River, just above the thundering Lanker Falls, a tree trunk was moored. Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg stood on a huge, water-worn stone in the middle of the torrent and watched it. The log was covered in feagles. They all looked cheerful. Admittedly, certain death awaited them, but it did not involve, and this is important, having to spell anything.
"You know, no man has ever gone over these falls and lived to tell the tale," said Nanny.
"Mr. Parkinson did," said Granny. "Don't you remember, 3 years ago?"
"Ah, yes. He lived, certainly, but he was left with a very bad stutter," said Nanny Ogg.
"But he wrote it down," said Granny. "He called it My Fall Over the Falls. It was quite interesting."
"No one actually told a tale," said Nanny. "That is my point."
"Ay, weel, we're as light as wee feathers," said Big Jan, "and the wind blowing through the kilt keeps a man well aloft, you ken."
"I'm sure that's a sight to see," said Nanny Ogg.
"Aye, they're all ready," said Rob Anybody.
"Fine. Would you be so good as to untie yon rope, Mrs. Ogg?"
Nanny Ogg undid the knot and gave the log a shove with her foot. It drifted a little way and then got caught by the current.
"Row, row, row your boat," Daft Woolly suggested.
"What about it?" said Rob Anybody as the log began to speed up.
"Why don't we all sing it?" said Daft Woolly.
The walls of the canyon were closing in fast now.
"Okay," said Rob. "After all, it is a pleasing nautical ditty. And Woolly, you're to keep yon cheese away from me. I dinna like the way it's looking at me."
"It hasna got any eyes, Rob," said Woolly meekly, holding on to Horace.
"Aye, that's what I mean," said Rob sourly.
"Horace didna mean to try and eat you, Rob," said Daft Woolly meekly. "And you was sae nice and clean when he spat you oot."
"And how come you ken what name a cheese has?"
Rob demanded, as white water began to splash over the log.
"He told me, Rob."
"Aye," said Rob, and shrugged.
"Oh, okay. I wouldna argue wi' a cheese."
Bits of ice were bobbing on the river. Nanny Ogg pointed them out to Granny Weatherwax.
"All this snow is making the ice rivers move again," she said.
"I know."
"I hope you can trust the stories, Esme," said Nanny.
"They are ancient stories. They have a life of their own. They long to be repeated.
Summer rescued from a cave. Very old, said Granny Weatherwax. The winter smiths will chase our girl, though.
Granny watched the Feagle's log drift around a bend.
Yes, he will, she said. And you know, I almost feel sorry for him.
And so the Feagles sailed home. Apart from Billy Bigchin, they couldn't carry a tune in a bucket, but that minor problem was dwarfed by the major problem, which was that they didn't bother with the idea of singing at the same pitch, or speed, or even with the same words. Also, minor fights soon broke out, as always happened even when Feagles were having fun, and so the sound that echoed among the rocks as the log sped towards the lip of the waterfall went something like, Row arg, gently, boat, da, ouch, gently, doon, da, boat, 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 diddly, boat, stream, boat, merrily, boat, ah, oh, Clevens!
And with its cargo of Feagles, the log tipped and disappeared, along with the accompanying song, Into the Mists. Tiffany flew over the long whaleback of the chalk. It was a white whale now, but the snow didn't look too deep here. The bitter winds that blew the snow onto the downs also blew it away. There were no trees and few walls to make it drift. As she drew nearer to home, she looked down onto the lower, sheltered fields. The lambing pens were already being set up. There was a lot of snow for this time of year, and whose fault was that? But the ewes were on their own timetable snow or not. Shepherds knew how bitter the weather could be at lambing. Winter never gave in without a fight. She landed in the farmyard and said a few words to the broomstick. It wasn't hers, after all. It rose again and shot off back to the mountains. A stick can always find its way home, if you know the trick. There were reunions, lots of laughter, a few tears, a general claiming that she had grown like a beanstalk and was already as tall as her mother, and all the other things that get said at a time like this. Apart from the tiny cornucopia in her pocket, she'd left everything behind. Her diary, her clothes, everything. It didn't matter. She hadn't run away, she'd run too, and here she was, waiting for herself. She could feel her own ground under her boots again. She hung the pointy hat behind the door and went and helped the men setting up the pens. It was a good day. A bit of sun had managed to leak through the murk. Against the whiteness of the snow, all colours seemed bright, as if the fact that they were here gave them some special brilliance. Old harnesses on the stable wall gleamed like silver. Even the browns and greys that might once have appeared so drab seemed now to have a life of their own. She got out the box of paints and some precious paper and tried to paint what she was seeing. And there was a kind of magic there too. It was all about light and dark. If you could get down on paper the shadow and the shine, the shape that any creature left in the world, then you could get the thing itself. She'd only ever drawn with coloured chalks before. Paint was so much better. It was a good day. It was a day just for her. She could feel bits of herself opening up and coming out of hiding again. Tomorrow there would be the chores, and people very nervously coming up to the farm for the help of a witch. If the pain was strong enough, no one worried that the witch who was making it go away was someone you last remembered being 2 years old and running around with only her undershirt on. Tomorrow might become anything, but today the winter world was full of colour.